Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report, a special Thanksgiving edition, as we now have, for the most part, Thanksgiving behind us and that shortened trading week. My name is Corey Fleck, and I appreciate you joining me on this weekend show. Boy, oh boy, was it ever a volatile week, especially for precious metals, and that's something that I will cover a fair bit, especially in this first segment. I am kicking off this show with Mark Chandler. He is a managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. He also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I visit every day. Now, Mark, you and I chat pretty much every Friday, and I appreciate you taking time on this Friday when we are recording it about halfway through the day to discuss, first and foremost, the moves in gold this week. It really started off as a bad week for gold, moving down about $30, and that seemed to be the trend of the week, which was consistent corrections in gold throughout the week. And as you and I are recording this, we're trading right around, let's say, 1785, right around that level. Another correction going on today in gold. It's dropped below that 1800. A lot of technicians are looking at around this 1760 level. Mark, give us your first initial summary on gold's breakdown, continued correction. How long do you think this could keep on going on for?
Yeah, no, it's been what a week for gold. I mean, it's been, you think about what happened, you know, in early August, we were testing $2,075. And I remember there were people who were complaining that when I talked about 2,000, that I was being too cautious. And the sell-off, even for people like me, the pace of this decline, despite what other things that gold has been correlated with, have done well this week. Equities. And a week, you'd expect a weaker dollar. And when I say weaker dollar, the euro is basically at the highest level it's been at since the 1st of September, which was a two-year high. The dollar index is broken down below 92. And yet gold cannot really sustain even the modest upticks. I think a lot of people caught on the wrong side. And I think that I, too, had overestimated underappreciated how much people had bought gold because of the pandemic. And as soon as we got the first, you know, once Pfizer made its announcement on on the vaccine, I think that what we've seen happening is it seems like the strongest selling pressure is coming from the ETFs, who, of course, a lot of people had poured into gold ETFs and the gold funds, the open-ended funds. And that this is where the selling pressure seems to be coming from. And the fact that we see like strong selling pressure into modest upticks tells me there might still be some overhead supply.
So, Mark, you mentioned there that it seemed like gold really ran higher on the back of this pandemic. But in all fairness, it had been correcting over the last about 4 months now. The last couple weeks have been more or less a breakdown in gold as it broke below that 1850 level on the back of, yes, vaccine news. So I guess hopes of this pandemic is going to be behind us. But a lot of the narrative, too, that was driving gold is easier money policies. That hasn't dissipated much, though, right? We should be getting some sort of a spending package and a continued easy Fed next year.
Yep, no, I agree. And that's the thing that I put more like, I should say, stock in, is the fact that for people like me who are not always bullish on gold, who see the fact that one of the arguments we use against gold has been that, well, you don't get any interest for holding this asset. It's a non-yield-bearing asset. But now we've got like trillions of dollars of negative-yielding bonds in the world. And like you say, low yields for as far as the eye can see. And in fact, you think about what's happened in the past couple of weeks. You've got just yesterday, while we were celebrating Thanksgiving in the U.S., Sweden's Riksbank, it made a big jump, about a 25% jump in the bonds it's going to begin buying. The UK has the UK and Australia have eased policy recently, and in a couple of weeks, everybody's expecting the ECB to ease. And the rumors, speculation of the past week or so in the U.S. is that the Federal Reserve will shift its bond buying, maybe increase the amount, but at least shift buying into the long end of the curve to provide more stimulus. So I think that the safe haven aspect of gold, because you know, we talked about it before, we'd see that gold and the stock market were correlated. So gold was treated mathematically, if you will, as a risk-on asset. And yet the risk-ons come back into the fore, and gold hasn't. So I'm concerned about it, but I agree with you that we might have to go a bit lower first, but the larger macro picture, I think, will support gold, and we just have this washout, which I think is more about stale longs getting out than about momentum traders trying to jump onto it.
So does that mean that all those people that did jump on that gold bandwagon when it broke through 1800 and very then quickly through 1900, they were all in a lost position, and you think for the most part these people are out of their positions now?
Well, I don't know, like, out of it yet completely, but it does seem to me that just from the size of the flows and the volumes we've been seeing, it would seem that a lot of people have gotten out. And we'll have to wait for this, you know, the CFTC figures. But that'd be my sense, is what we have to wait for is we need like a capitulation trade. And the break of the 200-day moving average, the move through 1800, I think that's why I like that level that you mentioned, the 1760 level. And if we go through there, I think we got to be thinking about 1700, which is just still in the big picture of things. You think about where we were a year or two ago, and this still is within what one would expect of a deep correction rather than a bear market necessarily.
Okay, I agree with that. It does continue to look simply like a deep correction, and a correction that was needed because of how quickly gold went up, especially in, it was that July timeframe when it just broke through a lot of resistance levels. So Mark, does the gold trade need to go back to being looked at as a safe haven asset? Because you're right, it was moving higher. That is, gold was moving higher with the equity markets. There seemed to be this optimism when investors put money into the U.S. markets. It also landed in gold. That all changed a few weeks ago, I think we can say, when the rotation really took hold in U.S. markets and gold really started to sell off. But then you look on the flip side and you saw Bitcoin just scream higher. Can you make any sense of that trade?
Yes, I can't make sense of the Bitcoin, but I do think that that with gold, I do think that you have something there. That so when I think about gold, what are the main drivers of gold? So I typically will look at interest rates or inflation, and of course we've seen a rise in both, like that is to say, U.S. yields have risen, and the break evens. That's the difference between the inflation-linked securities and conventional bonds. That break even has also moved up. So we've got higher yields and higher inflation expectations. That'd be negative for gold. But we do have stocks, so sometimes it does trade, like we say, as a risk-on asset. Just you buy everything, especially things that hurt when you drop on your feet. And so we've had a rise in commodities, including oil, but also the grains. And we've had a rise in stock market. That you would think would be positive for gold. And then you have the dollar, which also you would expect to be positive for gold. So I don't know. I can't deduce from first economic principles which driver we should put the most weight in. But it seems to me that the vaccine, the rise in U.S. yields are all painting the same kind of picture of a reflation story. Not necessarily inflation, but reflation.
Exactly. And you look to something even like copper, too, which had a very significant breakout this week, trading at levels we haven't seen since 2014, even before, actually 2013. Yeah, let me correct that. That is a key breakout as well. Let's talk about the dollar, too, because the dollar itself is arguably breaking down. I know you're a dollar bear, but do you think this dollar breakdown is coming a little bit too early right now?
Last week, I cautioned against chasing the dollar lower. We did move a bit lower on the dollar than this past week against almost all the major currencies. And as we talk here today, the euro is, like I say, above 1950, testing its highest level since September 1st. But I tell you, I think that the market right now is vulnerable that it's really exaggerating the dollar negatives in the short run. Here's what I'm looking at. Part of the dollar bearish argument I've given you over the last several months, is that the U.S. doesn't have the growth and interest rate differentials to support the dollar. And so the greenback then has to act as a cushion, as a shock absorber to attract foreigners into our asset markets. And what's happened, I think, is that partly because the U.S. social restrictions in the face of this COVID surge are not nearly as severe as most of Europe's. The U.S. economy seems to be growing at a much better pace than Europe. So we saw the PMIs, the preliminary PMIs for November, and they were below the 50 boom-bust level for the Eurozone and Japan and the U.K. The U.S. surprised on the upside. We've had a string of other data, including durable goods data, inventory data, that all point to the U.S. economy perhaps being much more resilient than we thought. I'll give you an example. The Atlanta Fed, like a couple of other Federal Reserves that we have a GDP tracker. It's not supposed to be a forecasting tool as much as sort of an accounting function. As the data comes in, what kind of pace is this showing? Well, about a week ago, the Atlanta Fed was at about 5.6%. That would be annualized growth in Q4. After this recent string of U.S. economic data, they revised up their tracker to 11%. Now, at 11% annualized, so you unannualize, it's an incredible number, I think, especially given that the Eurozone, Japan, and the U.K. may contract in Q4. And we're going to get this message again next week. We're going to get the U.S., the Eurozone, and Japan are going to be reporting employment figures. And what's going to show is that the U.S. unemployment likely slipped a bit. Remember, we peaked around 14%, and it was below 7%. And it might slip a little bit further below 7%. On the other hand, the Eurozone and Japan are expected to see a new cyclical highs in the unemployment. Ours is falling, albeit slower than most people would like to see it fall, but Europe and Japan's is still rising. And so I think that that kind of fundamental backdrop, coupled with the ECB meeting sooner in December before the Fed meets, will help sort of remind people, I guess, in a sense, of this growth divergence, inflation divergence. Both Europe and the Japan are experiencing deflation, and the U.S. PCE deflators, both the core and the headline, are above 1%. Again, it's not as good as the Fed would like, not at the Fed's target of 2%, but in the foreign exchange market, it's about relative value. Everything's a relative value, and I think the U.S. is doing better than Europe and Japan, and that should begin giving the dollar some support as we, that is the dollar, approaches the lower end of a 3 or 4 month trading range.
Okay, so you say this data should give the dollar some support here and maybe a bounce, but isn't the market telling us right now that they're looking past the data, I guess, or just flat out ignoring the data? Maybe we do need the ECB to actually announce some easier program to get traders to switch their positions and their expectations, because right now the data hasn't resonated with traders.
Right, I agree with you. I think that the ECB is going to have to do something if they want to get ahead of the curve of expectations. But at the same time, what I'm looking at too is that these the different momentum indicators like the RSI or the MACD or the slow stochastic, they all suggest the dollar is getting stretched, as you would imagine. I mean, remember, and then on the night of the election, the euro is trading 116, the lower end of the range. And so I think that what I'm really suggesting is that as traders, as investors, we have to make a decision. The dollar index has been roughly 92 to 94. The euro has been roughly 116 to 120. As we approach the edges of the ranges, we've got to decide whether we should play for the breakout or should we be playing to continue the range. And often I find that the risk-reward, as you get close to the edge of the range, the risk-reward really pays you to even up or not to play for the breakout. And what happens is you often miss the breakout, but you just miss the first part of it. You can always, so if you get out in 1950, you say, well, it's not going to get above 120, and lo and behold, we're wrong again, and it goes above 120, you could buy it above 120. And emotionally, you're stronger about buying it above 120 after having taken profits, as opposed to thinking what happens when you go from 119.50 back to the middle of the range, 118, and the shoulda, woulda, couldas.
Well, I guess that's where we stand, though, right? Is waiting for this market to turn and then, I guess, jumping on that trade. But what does this mean for inflation expectations then if the dollar starts to rise? And if the dollar starts to rise, does that mean that gold and the dollar can go up together?
Well, it's interesting, right? Because gold and the dollar have been falling together the past couple of weeks, actually, since we got the first news about the vaccine. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm mixed about what the exact point is that triggers this all. But I do think that that what we're seeing is that there has been a rise, as we're talking about, in the industrial metals, the grains, and the energy complex. But whether that really is inflationary is a different story. Partly, as you know, a lot of the goods that we buy don't have a lot of raw materials in them. You think about our cell phones, our computers. There's a lot of things that we have these days are not raw material intensive, but sort of knowledge and intellectual property intensive. And what a lot of the commodities are showing us is sort of the strength of not of the economy so much, or European economy, but the strength of the Asian economies. And here I'm thinking about China, but also South Korea, Taiwan, Vietnam. And I think that this is what I think the commodity market is more telling us, more about the demand from Asia than it is about the supply.
So then, Mark, as we look forward to the rest of, let's say, this year, so just December, do you see any major changes, any major trends being broken, or what are you going to be paying attention to for the rest of this year, just in December?
Yeah, so we've had some very powerful trends, and so I want to be on the lookout for some technical sign of a reversal pattern, which I would respect given the magnitude of these kind of moves that we've seen. You know, this month of November has been, our Russell 2000, broad measure of the stock market, is up almost 20%. The MSCI Asia Pacific Index and the European, the Dow Jones Stock 600, both of those indexes are up 4 weeks in a row for around 13 to say 14%, something on that kind of magnitude. These are just huge moves. And so I just want to be attuned to or sensitive to possible reversal patterns. These could be single day candlestick. It could be what we're seeing in sterling, for example. We've tested almost every day this week. The sterling got into the 133.80 to 133.95 area. It couldn't get above that 134. And so today, sterling is actually finishing relatively offered. The same thing about the Mexican peso. It's been really one of the strongest currencies in the world in the last several months. Dollar broke down against it, but it's come back and it's still straddling to say this 20 peso area. And I think the other currency I'd point out is just China. The RMB had strengthened sharply in recent weeks. And in the last week, it's really moved sideways. And so to me, these currencies and gold might be really telling us that the dollar is due for a bounce. And so again, like in the equity market, I just want to be sensitive and sort of keeping our eyes looking at the possibility of a reversal pattern. Not happening today.
Not happening today. That's a key point. But again, some of these trends are getting very stretched. Some very interesting comments regarding the currency market. And again, it is a comparison game. And right now, the markets don't seem to care. But data out of the U.S. has been generally better than Europe and Japan. Mark, it's great chatting with you. Thank you again for taking some time on this Friday, which is posted on the weekend show, to recap a crazy volatile week and a fairly larger degree correction for precious metals and focusing on the dollar. Mark, great chatting with you. Thanks, buddy. Have a great rest of your long weekend.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.